Thou living room's dark, save for light being cast from the big TV screen and the imminent sunrise that's teasing the once starry sky with whispers of morning.
Hey, George.
Hey, Lyons. How's it going?
It's going video games. I worry a little bit with every passing year that, like, kids and job and stuff will mean less video games, but nope. I've just stayed exactly irresponsible about my responsibilities enough to continue to play video games.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, no, I mean, like, other things, potentially more important things, have fallen off the radar, but not video games.
No, that would be a tragedy. we played... I hope I'm going to pronounce this correctly. Is it Pipistrello? Pipistrello.
I've pronounced it Pipistrello.
Pipistrello. Oh, and you also... You have the emphasis up front. It's not Pipistrello, it's Pipistrello.
Yeah, it's Pipistrello. Pipistrello, yeah.
Pipistrello.
And it's cool because my kids have both watched and played some of this game, and they call it Pipistrello.
Ooh.
Which is potentially correct.
I don't think it is, but it is very fancy.
No, there's no R. That's where there's... Yeah. But anyways, but yeah, they say Pipistrello, but they also say Graham Ham Crackers, so, you know, which I think
is delightful.
That
one is correct.
But, right? Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, you have a Graham Ham Cracker? It's like hard for me to correct that one.
Yeah. Okay, you win this round. I was excited that we were going to do an episode about this because this game came to me by virtue of a few people I follow online just being like, man, it's a really good game. I don't feel like this game gets the amount of, like, praise it deserves. And then I looked into what kind of game it was, and I was like, oh, this does seem like the kind of thing I would enjoy. And then I had one of those serendipitous capitalist moments where when I went to look, it happened to be on, like, ultra mega sale. I was like, okay, well, it comes highly recommended, and it's, like, super cheap, so I will play it. And then I just burned through it in like 4 or 5 days. I just essentially shelved everything else in my life to play this game as in close to as one sitting as I could. And then I mentioned to you, like, hey, this game's pretty good. I actually think you would enjoy it quite a bit. And could you do a dramatic reenactment for me of your response after you started playing it?
Yes. Yeah, so one thing that you did that was absolutely critical was you said, like, hey, check this game out. It feels a lot like Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past. You know, like, it has that feel. So I was like, okay. And so I started playing it initially, and I was like, all right, this is kind of good. But then as I was like, oh, wait, let me put myself in the mindset of this should be generating nostalgia for me. This should feel like Legend of Zelda. And then once I got there, I was like, oh, man, this is amazing. It is good on its face, right? But, like, I'm like, oh, man, this is amazing. I remember playing it, and I think I immediately texted you and said, you have done God's work by bringing this to my attention. Thank you so much. And then I gave you inspiration for the next time we play D&D and IDM, which may not happen for several months or years, but I trust that you will remind me at the worst possible opportunity in the middle of the game, like, oh no, remember, I have inspiration from this thing 9 months ago.
Yeah. And we're burning a little bit up front, like, what we thought about it, but I don't care. I need to also point out, because I don't remember if I said this in our text conversation, but, like, I legitimately hesitated before I was like, am I going to compare this to Link to the Past? Like, a game that I know we both love and have massive nostalgia for. Like, am I comfortable? Because I could have just said, oh, it has a Zelda-like UI or way of interacting with the world. But what I said was, it feels a lot like A Link to the Past, which is like, that's writing a big check, right? That's the kind of check where you're like, I'm going to need you to get a cashier's check for this amount. I can't just rely on your signature, buddy.
Yeah, like we got to get bearer bonds, you know? Like, yeah, no, 100%. And I'm glad that you did, like I said, because as I was playing it, it helped me. And I think what part of the reason why we kind of decided on doing this episode is it put me in kind of an analytical mindset of, like, okay, well, how and why is this like Legend of Zelda, and what does it do the same, and what does it do differently? And as I was kind of going through it, I was like, oh man, it does hit that Zelda feel, scratches that itch very well, but it also does a bunch of other stuff too that I thought was really cool. So here we are.
So real quick, in case anybody's never heard of this game, Pipistrillo and the Cursed Yo-Yo is a kind of nostalgic throwback vibe of a game that looks and plays a lot like a 16-bit top-down style Legend of Zelda, but the visuals feel a lot more like, well, what if Link to the Past had been made by the team that did Earthbound? Like, it's just a very quirky art style, very specific audio. Everything feels very like intentional in that way. It's not generic fantasy. Also, yeah. I learned while looking up some like reference images and stuff to have in front of me along with my notes that the kind of bat that he is supposed to be is just called a Pipistrillo.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so this is like a the word Moana means ocean thing where it's like,
yeah,
if you speak the language or know the reference, it's like, wait, so his name is just Bat and he's a bat?
Wait, the main villains for the final saga of Dragon Ball Z are Bibbidi Bobbidi and Boo, you know, like,
yeah. It is about that level of sophistication. We should talk about what it looks and sounds like in a little bit more detail. It looks old, but in like a good way.
I really loved the overall visuals, and the interesting thing is because like it looks like old school Zelda in the fact that it kind of has that, you know, like 16-bit feel to it, you know, the same thing as Earthbound or all that kind of stuff. But realistically, the visuals are wildly different from Zelda because this takes place in a city in like, you know, what we were led to believe would probably be like, I don't know, like 20 to 50 years in the future, you know?
Yeah, it's the modern-ish era. Like, there isn't...
Yes.
There's weird technology for this universe, so there's, like, battery-powered machines all over the place, but there's also, like, sedans that drive on, like, normal roads, right? So it could be any time between, like, 1970s technology and, like, 2050s technology.
Yeah, and I don't know a good place to put this in, so just to let our listeners know, in case they have not played the game, is that where this is set is in a not-too-distant future where they have found a way to kind of create almost limitless energy in the form of these rose petals, and then they have found a way to create limitless energy in the form of batteries. So, like, it's like, well, what if that technology existed? What would it be like? So it's kind of got that, you know, it feels like it's at about the same point in time as, like, Squid Games, you know? Like, just post-capitalism, post-apocalyptic enough, you know, like late-stage capitalism, right, where it's like, we're not there yet, but give us another 20 to 50 years, and we should be there.
Yeah, and that's relevant because the plot essentially centers around that, which I think is a little bit unusual to have, like, an adventure game where the thing that is, like, driving the plot forward is not magic, right? Like, in a lot of Zeldas, you would have like, oh, there's the Triforce, or there's these magic stones, or the moon is going to crash into the world. But like, there's no scientific explanation for any of that. Whereas the central plot contrivance is the main character's aunt's soul has been trapped in a battery and is being used to like power a bunch of scammy businesses. And so all of the visuals are in that kind of frame, right? It's everything looks very, because this is all normal for them, right? So it's like people wear what they would consider normal clothes, and it's like there's some recognizable like cars and buildings and stuff. It's very Earthboundy, which I was worried about at first almost, because that I've played Earthbound and I thought it was quirky has led to some amazing games like Undertale, and it has led to some garbage games, which I won't name because that's mean, but it's an homage can become, you know, like trite and cringy real easy, right? And this is that. This is very, very thoughtfully done art. And the soundtrack, I was playing this game for maybe, I don't know, like 15 minutes, and I was like, am I bobbing my head and jamming out just like walking around the town? And so I had to look, and Jake Kaufman, I think is his full name, the guy who did the music for the Shovel Knight series, was the composer for this.
Oh, well, there you go. Yep.
Right? I was just like, oh, yeah, of course, obviously. It is a composer that I know and routinely listen to the soundtrack from his game. So that led to me immediately purchasing the soundtrack, if that gives you any idea of the quality of the jams in this game.
Yeah, yeah, no, I, and although, you know, my troglodyte ears always and still remain, I will say that, like, even the kids, when they were playing it, they were like, this is good music. And I was like, yeah, I need to get this into, because we actually play a game called Guess the Music, where I've got a list of like 100 different video game songs, and I have to guess.
Oh, do they still do that? Goes to.
Yeah, they still do that.
I love that.
Yeah, and so I was like, oh, I need to get Pipistrillo into the mix, because it's iconic enough and enjoyable enough that, like, you can recognize it and then recognize the game that it's from. So I guess the highest praise I can give a video game soundtrack is I have included it in Guess the Music, you know?
That's actually, that to somebody who doesn't have young kids, it's like, well, so what? So, like, your young children like it? And it's like, yes, my yes. young children like it.
And I don't like anything. Now, so some of the specific visuals that I thought were just so clever, one of the big ones was so at one point in the game, you have to collect the purple battery, right? Because it's very much so. There's red, yellow, purple, and blue.
Blue, maybe. Anyways. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Four different. There are four MacGuffins.
Four MacGuffins, each of a different color that you must go collect. So when you're collecting one of them, you part of that quest is you have to get to the end of a line, like it's a long line of people waiting for a concert, right?
Oh, yeah. That one, yes.
Yes, one of the clever visuals that they did is that all of the people are pointing towards the front of the line, right? So as you're searching the line, you never get disoriented in terms of whether you're going forwards or backwards, because everybody's looking forward, so you know that you need to go in the opposite direction. Especially considering the fact that in order to do that, sometimes you have to go into the sewer in order to get, like, around the line. And when they do that, they make sure that when you go into and where you come out of the sewer are both visual, are both in the same frame. So that way you can still orient yourself. You never travel through the sewers like great distances and then come out somewhere else. And I was like, that's such a nice visual affordance that lets me, when I'm doing 15 different things, continue to know which, that I'm going in the right direction, you know, and that yeah. that's clever. You know?
Well, and to agree effusively with your praise is that so the whole game takes place in part of a city, right? Because mm-hmm. your aunt's corporation is being, like, literally violently taken over by these, like, four scammy corporations in the city, and there are areas that are obviously dungeons, like, oh, now I'm in the factory, and this is, like, yep. the dungeon that takes place in the factory. But the dungeon that is, like, the concert, half of the dungeon is just getting into the concert, and the line is just a long snaking line through, like, a huge portion of the city. So yep. you are technically outside where there are no barriers, except the line is so dense and everybody is so anxious to get into the concert that they become the wall, and then you yes. go in and out of the sewer. So, like, it almost sounds silly to say, like, well, everybody's facing the front of the line. It's like, well, no, yes, obviously they're facing the front of the line. It's like, no. You would be so disoriented if you yes. did not know, like, if they were just milling around, that would actually be yep. really difficult, because you are going from above ground to underground. You're going in and out of buildings. You're, you know, jumping over gaps and stuff. And so you have to always know, I'm heading vaguely in, like, a, I don't know, northwest direction. And because yes. they are all, like, you know, pressing to try to get into the concert, it actually feels like you're in a very clear corridor, even though you're, like, out just on the overworld map.
Well, and that's and they do that type of thing in many different places. And it's very interesting, because it's almost like we've talked before about difficulty, but, like, being able to pick the difficulty without knowing that you're picking the difficulty, right? But the visuals were so clever in this game that so one of the things that I both love and hate is in some video games where, you know, they give you a marker on a map that says, hey, this is where you need to go. I like that because I always know where I'm supposed to be going. I don't love that, though, because especially if I don't need to go into a map screen to view it, sometimes I don't even notice this beautiful video game they've made because I am singularly tunnel vision focused on the dot on the map I need to go to.
Yep.
Especially if the map is on your HUD, then I'm just staring at the HUD playing, you know, radar the video game.
Yeah, dude, that I became aware of that problem, I think probably around like Final Fantasy X, because when they went to the PS2, there was a massive spike in the quality of the visuals, but also you can't just freely interact with like the foliage in the forest. And so when you look at the map, there is a very obvious hallway, which is the path you can walk down, even though it looks like you're just out exploring the world. And so I didn't realize it until years and years later, but I was like, oh, when I play a game like this, I am navigating by map because it's in the corner and there's my little dot and I can tell where the boundaries are because they're drawn. Whereas if I look at the overworld, it's like, can I walk through those bushes? No, I cannot walk through those bushes. And designers know that that happens because there are lots of games where it's like, but you can walk through these bushes and it's not notated on the map, right? Because they're trying to like steer you back to looking at the world so that you're looking for visual cues of where like secret areas or whatever might be. So I agree with you. It is a really tricky line to say, we want to give you a bunch of information, especially in a game that is a Zelda-like where there's a map with a whole bunch of markers of like, here's optional stuff, here's extra stuff, here's ladders up, here's ladders down, here's building entrances. Like it could be it would be very easy to navigate by map if the world wasn't doing enough to help you navigate.
100%. And so then I'll stop effusively praising this one thing and go on to effusively praising other things. But no, so like, so to your point, right, is that like, you know, if there's a dot on a map, you tend to follow that, right? The next layer lower is some games have just kind of like a general kind of like compass that points you in the right direction. And then for some of them, it's kind of like, oh, you can press a button and it'll like flash like and point you in the right direction, right? But this game takes it one step further, which is that any time when I would have pushed the I'm disoriented, where do I go button, I don't even need to do that. I just look at the screen. That is the same thing as all of a sudden Navi popping up and saying, hey, listen, go over here, right? So the fact that they're able to do that and not break your immersion is just, you know, truly, it's clever. It's crazy clever. I can recognize it. I don't think I could ever build something like that, you know?
Right.
I can see that level of cleverness in others. I am not that clever.
Yeah. I know what a spaceship looks like, but I cannot make one.
Yeah. One of the other things that for the visuals is the map. I loved the map because one is all of the rooms are in like single brick, like kind of layouts, you know? So one, that looks, when I looked at the map, I had like a flashback to the OG Zelda Nintendo Power maps where they would like put like what the whole overworld looked like. And I was like, oh, this is a 1-to-1. And the map, it's important that you look at the map from time to time, which they put in its own place. You can't just sit there and stare at it, right? Because some of the puzzles, when you like, you're like, how do I approach this? But then the map clearly labels water, pit, and obstacles and all that kind of stuff. So you can be like, oh, okay. So there's like kind of an outcropping here that I didn't really see. I think that's what I need to be working on. So the map is very lovingly crafted and very reminiscent of OG Zelda's.
And I actually think I have a good transition for us into gameplay. If I could, are you good on audio visuals?
The only last thing I had for audio visual is Linkolin is obviously Link. That's it.
Oh, I did. I appreciate little stuff like that. There, every time you play a smaller studio game, there's one of the big risks is like cringy indie game humor, right? They tend, I don't know why indie games tend to skew toward like fourth wall breaking, acknowledging a reference instead of just like trusting the audience to get the reference or for it to be placed well enough that they don't need to, like, it's okay if you don't get the reference, it could just go by as like a thing in the world. But yes, that was obviously Link, and I was like, yeah, I get it. I'm in the club. I'm cool.
I get it. And he's got his hookshot and he's got his bombs and he's got all of his stuff and a sword.
Yeah. No. Did I pause the game and turn to the person I was in the room with and go, hey, that's Link. I'm fighting Link right now because this game plays kind of like Zelda. You see what's happening is.
And they're like, we're in a hospital. So,
sir, this is a Wendy's. Yeah.
Sir, can I have your order? But outside of this, so that was one thing I want to mention. But the other thing I did want to hit on again is just how amazing the map is, which I think you had something to say about that.
I did have something to say about that. So the thing about the map is after I'd been playing for a bit and more of the map started to fill in and more markers started to show up on the map, and some of those markers are things to help the gameplay experience be smoother, even though I'm not sure I believe that the character would be the kind to write this information down, is things like, you can't go this way right now, right? Like,
right.
There is actually not, you can't go this way right now. It's, there is an obstruction here. So maybe you have the tools you need to conquer that barrier, but there is a barrier of some kind here. And the more information I got on the map, like, hey, there's an optional thing over here. There's a health upgrade over here, right? Because there's a lot of mini puzzles just like scattered throughout the world. The more I started to realize, I was like, wait, this isn't just a Zelda-like. This is a Metroidvania, because there's a lot of backtracking, but it never, because the world is so like dense and compact, I never really felt like, oh man, I went all the way over here and I don't have the septuple jump, so this was a huge waste of my time, right? Like, I didn't have that feeling. And so it actually took me a while to be like, oh, there's a lot of doors that I need keys for. And those keys come in the form of like traversal powers or weapon power-ups, which is very Metroidvania coded. And I was like, oh, that's why I am enjoying this so much. This isn't a favorite thing of mine. This is two of my favorite things. This is a Metroidvania in the style of my favorite Zelda. And so once I had that realization, I was like, oh no, that's it. I'm just a huge fanboy for this game now.
Yeah, no, actually, it was funny because for a lot of the time when I was playing this game, the kids would be sitting down beside me just watching me play, you know, which also felt very like, you know, oh, well, like one person's playing and everybody else is watching kind of a thing. But there were a couple of times when like Teddy was like, oh, why don't you go up here? And I tried and I was like, oh, no, they've got this gateway out. And they were like, what do you mean? And I was like, well, you see this area? There is no way for me to get across it. So that means there must be a power I get somewhere else. And they want to make sure that I have that power before I go any further, because all of the puzzles that come up require me to have it. And Teddy was like, what? And I was like, no, dude, trust me. That's what's happening here. And so, and the nice thing is that they make it so clear when they're doing that, right? Like, there's no,
it's never a gap you can almost jump over.
Almost make. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, hey, this, you can jump a 2-block square. You can, you know, whatever, UFO jump 5 blocks, but this is like 8 blocks. There's just no way you're going to come anywhere close. Yeah. So I really, really appreciated that. I got it. I don't know how much time we're going to spend on this, but I want to talk about the debt mechanic.
Oh my God, dude, that was one of the things I think I turned, to a friend. I was playing this on my Steam Deck at their house and I was like, George is going to eat this shit up. Like, because you had already started playing it at that point, and I was like, this is the most wild upgrade mechanic I have ever seen. And he's like an economics dork, like free market weirdo, like he is gonna think this is amazing. So please tell me what you thought about
it. My God. Yeah. So the thing is that, one, they keep, it is advantageous to you to be kept in debt, right? Which, again, so hang on, let me take a step back. So let's talk about Mega Man for a second, because we all like talking about Mega Man, right? So so the thing with Mega Man, as Ego Raptor has explained to us in our infancy, because he was the Sherpa that led us to being able to do stuff like this, right? So he taught us that one of the things that makes Mega Man so powerful is that all of the game mechanics tie into the theming that's established at the beginning of Mega Man getting stronger, right? So one of the things I think makes this hit so nicely is the theming of capitalism causing problems is present in the mechanics, right? So if you're not in debt, you're playing the game wrong, you know, because you're not getting upgrades and you're not getting the more power that you need in order to play, or so you are led to believe, right? Because with the mechanic, what happens is when you go to get an upgrade, you get the upgrade immediately, but you go into debt and you get a drawback. Drawback.
So I want to do more damage. You get it immediately, and then you have to pay back money, which you get from defeating enemies. But there's also like you lose one health So yes. I get stronger, but I'm now more of a glass cannon. Like that every, yep. every single stat upgrade and power, unless it's like an item you earn, they all work that way the whole game.
Yep, absolutely. And so over time, as the abilities get more and more awesome towards the end, so do the drawbacks. Like some of the capstone abilities like make you take like -4 health, -12 ability point decreases. You know, I mean, the penalty gets pretty hefty. In fact, it gets so hefty that it nulls out the benefits you have gotten from the previous thing. So the numbers get bigger, but your gaming experience remains largely the same because it's like, ah, I have 7 health. I mean, I can only access 3 of it because I'm in this debt right now. But once I get out of that debt, well, then I'll incur more debt and you know, bring on this other negative attribute. But once I get past that, well, then I've got more to. And that's the thing, is that that's the rat race. Like they literally have you in a rat race in the game and still manage to make it fun. And also themed it animal-like, which I also think is kind of funny because it's a rat race. But yeah, no. So I was just kind of like, oh my God, this is so amazing, because the real thing to do is once, and especially is once you get to a certain point on the tree, if you're not using some of those later abilities, which you might not because of your gameplay style, the answer is to walk away. Just stop being in debt and enjoy the things that you have.
Yeah.
But that's really hard to do because there are check boxes to check. And I wanted all of those abilities.
Yeah.
I didn't need them, but I wanted them, and I was willing to go into debt for them. What does that say?
And I also found myself a few times being like, oh, I don't actually care about this ability. I care about the one after it. And yeah. It's not a perfectly linear track. Like there are places where it crosses, so you can mm-hmm. completely avoid certain things, but still get other things. But if you want the best stuff, like hit harder and take more damage betterer, you have to go through, there's a pretty clear path, right? The skill tree is not overly like an overly complex
no game. it's not a WoW skill tree.
No, God. I also found that it changed the way I approached certain parts of the game, because at first I didn't totally understand exactly what the trade-offs were, right? So like, in you start the game with 3 hearts, very, you know, Zelda-like, and mm-hmm. a lot of things make you take damage. And when you're learning the yo-yo based combat system, right, which is very like Castlevania Whip kind of thing, mm-hmm. you get hit a lot. You fall in pits and you take damage when you fall in pits, right? So I actually was dying pretty often at first. And a quick aside, just in case we don't get around to it later, dying is so forgiven. This game is so very generous. Like you can literally yes. just restart in the room you died in, which is yep. super appreciated. But how much health do you start with? Well, there's yep. a upgrade mechanic tied to that, right? So like it's not always obvious that restarting in the room is the correct choice, but it is always an option, which is nice. But there were certain powers that I was like, oh, I really want to like do more damage right now because I'm having a hard time with these new enemies that take more hits. So I'm going to go explore the world to pay off my yep. debt, because if I go straight into the dungeon or if I go directly to the boss fight that I know is in the next room, I'm going to get my lunch at. So like the debt mechanic gives you a place to pause and say, I'm going to go somewhere and like punch easy enemies, which you could also argue is kind of a critique on capitalism, right? Where it's like, oh yeah, before I go do something important and worthwhile, I have to go mug people in the street.
Yep. Yeah, no, as you do. No, and actually, so to your point, right, is that like you can choose when you want to feel all of your upgrades, which is nice. And also is there is one way to hack or grind, gamify all of your debt away. Did you I happened to stumble across it, but there's a really quick way to farm money. Did you find it?
Is it the Colosseum?
It's the Colosseum.
Okay, because yeah. the Colosseum is the one part of the game that I'm aware of that I didn't really interact with a ton, because I unlocked it while I was deep in debt and like super depowered. And so I went in and just got thrashed, and I was like, oh, I'll need to come back here when I'm not, like, I don't have both legs in a cast and my yo-yo's in the shop, you know? So I went off to, like, go do other stuff. And then I got so sucked into, like, a virtuous loop of, like, progressing through the story and, like, unlocking. I was like, oh, I got this ability, so now I can go get that, like, heart upgrade that I saw, you know, over that huge gap I couldn't cross. And I just literally got all the way to the end of the game and then was like, oh, I never went back.
Womp womp. Yeah, no, so the way it works is actually, I think, pretty fascinating, which is that when you go in, you have to buy your entry fee, right? So there's three levels of difficulty in terms of, like, you know, the overall fight, right? And you have to go get letters in order to be invited to that fight. But once you unlock all three, you can then pay to enter, and then it's like, for the lowest level one, it's $100 for one heart, $200 for three hearts, and then like $400 for five hearts, right? So it doesn't change the, and they say specifically, it doesn't change the prize, it just changes how much you have to pay to enter, right? So a couple of interesting things. One is that that money that they take away from you is always out of your coffers, it doesn't touch your debt. All the money that you get from playing the game goes into both.
Right. Right. And I don't think we said that explicitly, is when you are in debt, the way the debt is paid off is for every $2 you pick up, one goes just into your wallet and one goes to paying off the debt. So
yes,
you are 100% correct that if you can interact with a thing that makes you drop wallet money that you can then pick back up and turn into debt money, that is the one and only way to move money that you previously put in your wallet into your debt. That is very smart.
Yes, it is. It is really clever, especially the cleverest thing that they did, which is that if you are too, you do not have enough wallet money to participate even at the one heart level, we'll let you do it for free.
Oh, so,
yeah. So like, if you have less than $100, you can go in there and say like, hey, and they only give you one heart, you know, it's the hardest way you can do it. But yeah, you can go in there and be like, I don't have enough money. And it's like, cool. And then by the time you walk back out, you usually have about $300 in your wallet and you've paid off about $300 in debt. And so you can just do that iteratively and just blow through the skill tree if you want. You know, it's a little grindy, but it will set the game on easy mode. Which is, and we can transition this in a second, but like, again, that's where I think the game really shines is with the user-defined difficulty, right? Is it's like, hey, I'm willing to do that. I'm not willing to set a game on easy. I'm better than that, even though I know I'll have a better time, and it's absolutely me getting in my own way, and I shouldn't have that mentality. I'm better than easy mode. But I'll do that because then I feel like I've earned easy mode. It's still easy mode. Everything's way easier not being in debt in this game, but I feel like I've earned it because I've worked for it, and that I'm willing to do.
Yeah. My approach was, I'm going to go explore the world and beat up enemies and try to find secrets and stuff to paying off debt. And the thing that I appreciated tremendously is that was fun. Like that.
Yes. that's also true. Yeah.
Because the Colosseum, the advantage the Colosseum has, even though I didn't engage with it a ton, I just know because it's combat and you do a lot of combat in the game, is the combat is fun. So
yes,
you have a combat way to get out of debt, and you have an explore the world way, which still involves combat, but sometimes you do just find money as like a prize for solving a puzzle. So you have a fight way to get out of debt and an explore way to get out of debt. And because it is a, you know, Metroidvania Zelda like, both of those things should be fun all the time, right? Not to give too much praise to Ego Raptor, but you should never say, I'll check out that room later in a game about checking rooms, right? So if you're on your way to a dungeon in the office park, and on the way, it's like, hey, you could get a little bit more health. Because what do you have to collect? Four roses or something to get an extra heart?
Eight
roses, yes. And two of the soul things give you more.
Yeah, BP.
Yeah. If you're walking and you see like a little puzzle that'll give you more health or give you more money, which helps you pay off your debt and stuff, like, you, unless you don't have a movement ability or a combat ability necessary to engage with that, it's a bad thing if you're like, eh, right? Like, you should be like, yeah, puzzle, right? Like, you should be super excited. So I really love that they do entertain both of those and that they feed a solution to the same problem. Hey, you want to get stronger. you can go punch a guy in the face and take his wallet, or you can go punch some street thugs in the face and solve a puzzle. Like, both of those totally, and you could switch at any time, right? You can just flow back and
whenever
forth
whenever you're in the mood
for. Yeah, and it almost, it sounds stupid to phrase it this simplistically, but like, the game should be fun to play.
Yes. Yeah, it should, you should get enjoyment out of it. And actually, so I've got a thought on the difficulty, auto-scaling difficulty, and another thought on capitalism. For the user-defined difficulty, before we go back to capitalism, is did you use the, because, okay, so you can also, there's a badges mechanic. You can collect badges, they give you new abilities, right?
Yes, and the, if I remember correctly, the badges are, the badges and the debt, I think, are 100% optional. The only required upgrades to beat the game are movement and combat abilities, which you, I think, cannot miss, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, okay. So the badges are all optional abilities. Yes. Okay. Go ahead. Yes.
Yeah. So a lot of times they're given as rewards for defeating puzzles or, you know, whatever, right? But so there's one that was a badge that allows you to, once per room, fall off the map, and like, it's forgiven, you don't lose any life.
Oh, I had that one equipped almost the whole game.
Yep. And you can upgrade it to make it so you could take two hits, right? Yeah. So that's another one that absolutely puts the game on easy, because why? Because it says once per like room, but it's not, it doesn't like measure the absolute value of how many times you've done it in that room. It's how many times you've done it since you transitioned into that room.
Yeah, so you can just walk back out.
Yep, exactly. Which is what I did, you know, because I'd be like, oh, because I'm very interested in trying to solve the puzzle, and I'm not, you know, so I'll try 3, 4, 10, 20 times, you know, and I just didn't want to like die and come back and die and come back. So yeah, I would equip that badge, walk into a room, give it a shot, and be like, oh no, I made a mistake, walk out, walk back in, do it again. And that probably saved me hundreds of, because when you die you do lose a small amount of money, that probably saved me hundreds if not thousands of dollars by just having that equipped. And I was like, oh, this is a difficulty setting for sure. It makes the game way more forgiving, but because I was smart and figured it out, I'm more than willing to. So I honestly, if they had given me a difficulty slider, I probably slid the difficulty all the way down to kid, very easy, baby mode. But because I did it through game mechanics that I sussed out, I was okay with it. If you'd just been like, hey, you want to play on baby pee pants mode? I'd be like, no, I don't want to do that. But if I get to pick it, I will.
Yeah. No, charging the Buster shot does not feel like cheating, right? But right. When you know on the next screen, there's going to be an annoying enemy that can be killed with one charged Buster shot. And so you charge the Buster shot and then move to the next screen and immediately unload on them. It's like, oh, well, you only knew that that was there because you've played the game before. And it's like, yes. Yep.
Yeah. So it's a legitimate tactic. And then actually the thing with the badges and capitalism, I absolutely thought was fantastic, because there are so many times, especially with, you know, like with any system, right, economic or otherwise, where like you can find yourself where the system has become predatory and you're unaware that you're playing into it. But this one made me play into all of these predatory things. And I was like, oh, well, I'm going to do thing A because it makes sense. Oh, wait, is this what capitalism wants me to do? I say all that to say, new badges, right? So there, you know, towards the beginning, you get a badge that's like, oh, it lets you deal one extra damage or two extra damage if you're upgraded. I'm like, oh yeah, that's pretty cool. And then there was like, you know, some other ones that's like extra life, you know, like the badge that we described where you, you know, get a mulligan on every fall, you know, all of those were great. But then there were some where it's like, hey, it'll add a fire trail to your yo-yo when you fire it. And I'm like, I didn't know I wanted that until now. And now, because that's the thing, it's like I knew I wanted to do more damage. I knew I wanted more health. I knew I had all of those wants. But having a fire trail on the end of my yo-yo, I didn't even know I wanted that until all of a sudden they presented it as an option. But now you know what I got to do. I got to go out and get more BP so that way I can have this thing equipped. I got to go out and get more money so that way I can upgrade it. And now all of a sudden I have to keep playing. They have generated want. And once you generate want, you have generated a thing to go do. So I was like, how did they just give me homework by being like, hey man, you want to set this thing on fire? I'm like, I do. Yeah. I do want that. So I guess I've got to go exploring some more because I got to get the money.
Yeah. Well, and they did the upgrade thing that we keep using the word upgrade, but I want to be clear. The upgrade tree is where you upgrade like more like your stats or like this ability lasts longer, right? That kind of thing. And that's where you go into debt, right? the badges, you have to first find the badge in the world or find the blueprint. If you find the blueprint, you have to pay a guy to make it into the badge. And then once a badge exists, you can only equip it if you have enough BP. And more powerful badges take more BP, right? So you can only have so many equipped at a time. It's very reminiscent of like the relic system in Hollow Knight. Relics?
Oh, yeah.
Is that what they were called? Whatever. Right. It's a similar kind of thing. And you can or upgrade them.
Or the capsules in Dragon Ball Z Budokai 3.
Yeah. There's probably like a really, really obvious like game design term for this, but I don't know what it is. It's a limited pool of resources. But you can spend wallet money, not debt money, right? So you can spend wallet money to upgrade them, which I just realized those two systems work against each other. If you are currently paying off debt, you are earning wallet money slower. So if you want to save money, oh my God, if you want to save money to upgrade a badge, because upgrading the badges is very expensive, you are incentivized to not also be working on the upgrade tree, because then half of your money is going toward debt. So you either do both at the same time and you move through both trees slower, or you have to ping pong between them, which means the ways in which you get more powerful are more like surgy, right? Where it's like no change, then a sudden change, no change, then a sudden change, step function. God damn, man. It's so well thought out.
No, and that's the thing, is that there were a number of times where I was like, man, once I pay off this debt, then I'm going to have all my health back and I'm going to have more damage. And man, we're going to eat breakfast for every meal. And you know what? We're going to live in a golden house and have waiters and everything's going to be great. Once my ship comes in, it's all going to be great. And then I pay off the debt and I was like, yeah, now I'm going to be more powerful than, ooh, what's this other thing I want? Yeah. And then I'm right back in it.
It only happened once that I can remember in my whole playthrough, because it's very adventure length, right? So it's like 15 hours if you're doing a lot of the side stuff. Maybe longer if you want to go for like a completionist run. But you can, because the drawbacks to having a debt contract can be quite severe, you actually can abandon your contract and you just lose the money, right? It's gone. It is not banked. And there was one boss fight where I stupidly went through the dungeon in debt, but it was like a puzzle heavy area that didn't have a ton of combat. And so by the time I got to the boss, I was like, I am nowhere close to paying off this contract and I'm missing like half my health. And so I tried the boss and I got my lunch at, and I tried again and I did like a tiny bit better, but I was like, I would have to get so good at this fight to be able to do it with, you know, half my health missing. And so I went into the save room, like there's like a save room mechanic, and I dropped in and I told, is it your cousin, I think? And I was like, hey, cousin, I'm going to cancel this contract. And then I very much had the moment of like going to the boss the third time or fourth time and just being like, hey, and like tearing the contract up in front of them and then like suddenly being like huge and muscular and powerful. And it's like, it's on now. I took off my Yu Yu Hakusho spirit shackles and now I'm going to destroy you.
Which, you know, to your point, right, is that like, because I didn't think about this, is so you take, when you take on debt, so you go up to Pippa and you're like, hey, I'd like to get this thing. You go into debt and then you lose power. So like, I'm now imagining that, to your point, like the spirit shackles, like she clips like a leg brace on you that like depowers you, you know, because like, how's she doing that? And speaking of that, actually, is even like as I was going through and I was playing with the kids, they were like, oh, man, you know, you got to pay her more money because of this and that. And I was like, yeah, I'm trying to save the family. Why aren't they helping me for free? You know, And again, like, because, and you know, for many reasons, but like, it again drives home the capitalistic message of like, you know, hey, like, yes, in theory, our goals are aligned. We should just all be working together, but there's money to be made.
Well, and even so, the cursed yo-yo, right? So Pippi is like a yo-yoist. And so, he kind of sponges he kind of sponges off of his aunt, right? And then the four scammy business people steal your aunt's soul to put into a magic battery that will power their scammy businesses, but part of her soul gets trapped in your yo-yo, and so she is your you know, Navi voice of experience that kind of like follows you around the whole game, because she can like pop out of your yo-yo and talk when you're not in combat. And the entire game, her driving force is getting her business back. It's not, I don't want to be trapped in a yo-yo because that sounds like a hell. It's not, a wrong was committed and must be righted, right? It's not, I have to save the people of the town. She uses all of that language, but she is routinely called out for being either a liar or a hypocrite, because all she really cares about is getting her business back, because she is technically the mayor, but I mean, it's like a corporatocracy. She essentially runs the town through like corporate might. And then when your cousins or siblings or whatever, when they come and they're like, oh, hey, we're going to help you. You know, I'm the cousin who helps with the debt mechanic, and I'm the cousin who helps with the badge mechanic. It is 100% like, why are you not just helping me? And the aunt is immediately like, well, I mean, obviously, like, they can't just stop running their business because like there's a problem like that. The business will solve the problem, right? It's just, it's almost over the top in like the capitalism has some problems messaging, but it never crosses into preachy, because the whole world is so absurd that it almost forces you to grapple with like, well, this is such an absurd way to run a society. That's how we actually run society.
100%. And because the, again, like, I think that the reason why it works is because they're not like preaching to you through the text or through the story. You feel it as you're playing, where you're just like, oh, I just, like I said, like, it's like, oh man, if only I could get out of this crippling debt, then everything in the game, the game would be easy. If only I could get out of this crippling debt, then everything in life would be easier. But the game is set up to keep you in crippling debt, because that's the point. I've got a couple of other kind of like minor notes. One of them is, and this was so important to me because I remember hating it in Legend of Zelda as a kid, and they fixed it, and I'm so happy, which is in A Link to the Past. You get the boots that let you and then dash, right?
Pegasus boots.
Yeah.
But that was a very good sound effect. See, your ears, they don't always betray you.
Well, it's only because I've heard that sound a bajillion times.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because in that game, when you hit the edge and transition, you stop.
Oh,
and
yes.
You have to again in order to go through the map again. And it only saves you like a modicum of time. In Pipistrello, if you use your dash equivalent move, it carries through all the screen transitions. You can dash until the ends of the world if you so desire, and I liked that a lot.
Well, and more than that, I would not be surprised to find out if somebody who worked on this game had the exact same childhood experience, because there are puzzles that you can only solve because the dash crosses screens, right?
Yes.
Where it's like, oh, I need to get from here to there, but there's a huge expanse of water, and you can run over the top of the water if you use the Pegasus yo-yo, and that you know, pulls you, I think it's actually walk the dog, but you know, it pulls you forward at speed, and at speed you can only go in a straight line. But you can go over water, and there are a whole bunch of puzzles on like the outskirts of the town where if you're not really paying attention, you might just be like, oh, this is the edge of the map. But then if you look at the map, one of the things the map does is it makes it very clear where the edges are. So if there isn't an edge, it's like, oh, there must be something on the other side of that water. How do I cross water? I use the Pegasus yo-yo. And so not only did they make that work more nicely for just like getting around the city streets and stuff, because a lot of straight lines, right? Because it's like a metropolis. Yep. But they baked it into how you interact with the world. Like, they were very thoughtful about it.
Oh no, dude, it's amazing. And one of the things on that note was, I think a good measure for is this exploration game successful is every single time I looked at the map and was like, you know, I wonder. It always paid off every single time. I never had a, you know, I wonder if moment. And then I went to go explore. Because like, to your point, where I'd be like, oh man, there's no map there. But there's water on the edge. They wouldn't put water on the edge unless they wanted me to go explore there, right? And then you do it. And then there's a whole, not only was it like a, the payoff, it usually pays off in like a big way, you know, where it's like, not only is there one thing over here, there's like five things over here that you could, this is like, not like a 1 minute throwaway thing. I have now discovered half an hour worth of stuff to do over in this area. And it's really impressive, you know? Yeah.
On the south, most of the dungeons, you, there's like a way to get into the dungeon that is like part of the dungeon, which is very Zelda-like, yeah. Right? And then, you know, most of the, whatever the mechanic is, happens inside the dungeon. On the south side of the town, there is an entire dungeon on the surface in the form of the waterways, right? Like, it's just, it, you can see it basically from when you first start the game. Like, oh yeah, there's water on the south side of town. But it's not until you've unlocked a bunch of movement abilities that it's like, oh, this is like a whole optional thing. If I want to do like a fifth or sixth or whatever it would be dungeon, like I can go do that. And there's rewards along the way because the challenges actually get quite hard. So if you can only do some of them, it is still worth doing, which then tempts you into coming back later. So good.
It's so good. And actually one of the other, they also have that optional dungeon of like the subway system. Did you dip into that?
Yes. I can't remember what's down there, but I do remember going into the subway.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just this whole kind of little mini optional dungeon. They've got some rewards down there. There's a mini boss that you fight at the end, you know?
Oh, like
it's
Yeah,
you know, and I was just kind of like, oh, neat. This is a nice little, you know, like I, and again, you know, it's, I feel like it's, not to spend the whole episode quoting Igor after, but like, when he says, you know, like, you know, if you find a little random pit in the ground, isn't going to take you to a crazy dungeon with a mini boss. You're going to go down there, open a chest, go da na na na, and leave. Right? Like this game is the opposite of that. Every time I found a little like hole in the ground, I was so surprised and happy with like how interesting and fleshed out and like complex it was. And there were a number of times when even the kid, like I was playing, cause the kids were watching a lot of it, and they were like, I was like, oh. That was clever, the way that they made me think about that, or the way they made me approach this problem, or the way they set up, again, like with the line where it's like, oh, what is the line? It's a series of locked doors. It's a whole bunch of walls that they have set up that are removable. So then it's like, oh, so like in most old school Zelda games where it's like, you go through the dungeon, you find an item that gets you through the other half of the dungeon, right? It's like, half of the dungeon is locked off to me, not because I'm lacking of any ability, I just got to move this whole line. And now like, a bunch of the city opens up. So I was like, oh man, using people as a gating mechanic, that's clever. Yeah. You know, and they just do so many things like that. That's just really kind of a, neat.
So I want to do two things. And if you have more, we can do those things first, but I want to talk about the movement mechanics. Mm-hmm. And then I want to talk about the whole ending of the game. And I'm going to do something I've only had to do a few times, which is I'm going to put in the show notes and the timestamps, like where spoilers start and stop, because this game is recent enough and got way less fanfare than it deserved that, like, I don't want to spoil the ending for someone who doesn't want to be spoiled, right? If we were talking about a game from 92, then I'd be like, yeah, just deal with it. But, you know, it's a much more recent game. It's actually 25. Jesus, it's just last year. So, yeah, I want to talk about the movement mechanics a little bit in isolation. And then I want to specifically talk about the ending because of how they feature in the ending of the game, but I also want to be able to like talk about spoilers while we do that. So before we transition to those, do you have anything else?
Yeah, I had just a couple of throwaway things. One is when you're wall grinding, which is an ability you get, you can control how fast you're moving. So if you know, you can just go, at one point I was like, you know what? I just took it slow. And generally, I don't think that there's really any place when you're doing wall jumping where timing is hyper important. So they let you, again, auto-scale the difficulty. So if you want to be like Master Tony Hawk Grinder, you can go blazing through that, or you can do what I did, which took it at old man speed, and you know, just kind of went like click, 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 click. So I thought that was pretty cool. I liked the pigeons as chickens in the game. Yeah. There are pigeons about, and if you buy popcorn from somebody, they will just attack you. I don't know if there's a puzzle you're supposed to solve with that mechanic at some point. I never found it. I was just like, oh, so I get to pay $15 to get my butt kicked.
There is something I started to engage with it, but I didn't finish it. That's one of the things I left undone.
Yeah. And then the final thing, which was that's what it was, is that at one point you steal somebody's money, or you can, because it's like, you solve a puzzle and there's a whole stash of money like in the corner. And then when you leave, the guy goes, hey, did you just take all, like, that was mine. And it's in the sewers. So he's like, he's living in the sewers because he is, does not have any money. He has put some money aside that I just stole. Right. And so he's like, hey, you're going to give that back. And you know what I did? I gave it all back. And there was no reward. There was no, because of course not, because charity isn't rewarded. That's not part of the game's theming. But I did it anyways because I'm a good person, darn it. And I was very happy with it. And then I thought about friends where it's like, hey, I did a genuine good deed because I didn't gain anything from that. And then I realized that all the money that I had stolen, half of it went to pay off my debt and the other half came out of wallet money, which did help me and made me happy. And then when it made me happy, I was like, oh no, I'm just a selfish jerk. And so I had a real kind of emotive experience there. And that's it.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you remembered that because I had that exact same experience up to and including realizing that some of the money went toward debt, but all the money went for the wallet. And then I had the friend's memory and I was like, God damn it.
I did something good that didn't benefit me in any way. It benefited you a little bit. All right. Well, guess I'm a selfish jerk.
But I didn't know that when I did it. Does that count? All right, yeah. So movement mechanics, spoiler-free. So you interact with the world entirely through yo-yo crap, right? So yo-yo is your weapon. It is also how you do the dash. You unlock walk the dog, and that's what dashes you forward in a fast straight line. You can throw the yo-yo, and it will bounce off of very obviously 45-degree angle surfaces, and there are lots of traversal and combat reasons to do that, because if you dash into an angled wall, it will, you know, change the angle you're running at. So there's a bunch of traversal puzzles, as well as like you can throw it and hit an enemy that's far away. You can pick up items that way, right? So there'll be like a key or something on the other side of the room and you throw the yo-yo and then you catch it with your string, or you can run over and like pick it up before it, I think it's like 5 seconds or something before it'll like blink out and the puzzle is not considered solved. You have the wall ride. What other movement abilities am I missing? There's other attacking abilities too.
You can get the game breaking badge, which completely changes the way you move. Did you get that on New Game Plus?
I only got to do New Game Plus a little bit, and then we decided we were going to do an episode about it, and then I was like, I should go back to that more, and I didn't.
Yeah, no, so one of the badges, not to derail this, but one of the badges that you can get is, it's in that first prelim dungeon, you know? Yeah. The tutorial dungeon, you know? And if you have, because when you do New Game Plus, you have all of your traversal abilities, which you don't have at that point in the game. If you use them, you can get a badge which lets you, when you use your off-string yo-yo, wherever it lands, you press R2, you teleport there.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And literally when you pick up the badge, it says, this breaks the game. We highly recommend, if you're looking to play the game normally, you don't equip this badge. But here it is. Go have fun. And I liked that a lot because I was like, oh, cool. Again, I feel like I've earned it. And I immediately took the badge off and the kids were like, why don't you have that equipped? I'm like, it says specifically it breaks the game. You know, so I want to try it without it for a little bit, but that's kind of fun. You know?
That really tells you how aware they are of the balance of the game, that it's like, hey, man, if you're clever enough to realize that you can try this traversal puzzle that has a pit and use your two freebies and then walk off the screen and walk back and that resets your two freebies, good for you. You figured it out. But if even those designers had to say like, hey, this one is not, this is not like that.
Yeah, this isn't that. This is the game was not meant to have you have this ability, but
and it's locked behind New Game Plus. Like if you found that on your first playthrough, it would ruin the game.
Yes, because you'd be like, oh, this game is easy. None of these puzzles make any sense. These aren't puzzles. It's kind of like going through a maze, but you can move three dimensionally. It's like I fly over the maze. It's like, oh, yeah, I guess if you can fly.
Yeah, but that actually perfectly illustrates the point of the movement abilities that I think is so well executed, is they're all really fun and really distinct, right? I think you said near the beginning, like this one lets you, you know, normal jump, you can cover a gap of like two squares, right? Because it's very mm-hmm. obviously a grid, so you can always tell like how far things are. This will let me cover X distance. This will let me cover X plus two distance, right? But it's never, well, if I could get like a quarter of a square further. No, a quarter of a square is never going to do it, right? So
yep.
you have very, very clear uses for each of the movement abilities, which at first, because I did not immediately clock this as a Metroidvania, there were a couple of puzzles that I was like, am I an idiot? Which is often, often the answer is yes. Like, I'm not great yeah. at puzzle games, right? So there are a lot of times where I was like, I don't know. And I some of the very early puzzles, I probably spent more time on than I strictly needed to. But then I unlocked, you know, whatever like my first major movement ability was. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll come back to this later, right? And you have clear ways of moving, but I think every movement way can also be used in a combat way. So you never completely depart from movement and you never completely settle into only combat, right? You can use like the UFO yo-yo to move you across the map, like across a really long horizontal gap. But you can also like hit somebody with it, right? You can throw the yo-yo off the string, which is, it has some silly name. It's like loose or something.
Yeah.
But you can throw it off the string to like get a key that's on the other side of the room. But there's also your string is infinite length if it is continuing to ricochet. So you mm-hmm. can hit enemies with it by bouncing it off a bunch of walls and making it like absurdly long, right? And you can even throw pick back up with the string and then like jump off of it all in like fairly quick succession, right? You can, it's not smooth the way like a 3D action game would be smooth, but you can and have to later tether multiple abilities together in a pretty sophisticated way, right? Like you never are guessing for what ability is maybe the right one to use, or there are several that will fit and it's obvious that they'll all fit, but you often are asked to like use a bunch of abilities very, very fast, fairly proficiently. And there were a couple times where me falling into a pit is not because I didn't understand how to solve the puzzle,
yep,
but it actually did become like an execution skill issue.
Yeah.
And it was never unfair. It never felt unfun, but there were definitely times where I was like, man, I gotta press a lot of buttons to get through this room.
Yeah, where it's like, okay, up, down, hold. So two things on that. One is that, to your point, every new ability you get changes the way you look at the world, right? So like, you know, when you get the new like, oh, bounce off of a wall ability, then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I can bounce off of walls, and you start to see these walls everywhere, you know. And the same thing with like walk the dog, the same thing with like all of these abilities, it grows that. And then yeah, no, because I was playing with, again, with the kids watching, there was a number of times where Teddy was like, no, you need to wall jump, then this, and I said, buddy, the problem isn't in understanding, it's an execution, you know.
No, like, buddy, I get it, thanks.
yeah no, I know what I need to do, I am struggling to do it. And he and to Teddy's credit, he'd say like, oh, okay, you know, but like, and he'd leave it alone. But yeah, no, is it, I'd say when I would fail at a like traversal puzzle, 80% of the failures were just in execution. There was only about 20% of the time when I was like, no, okay, well, hang on, let me try this other thing. And one of them, I, out of all the puzzles in the game, there was only one where I got frustrated to the point where I looked up the answer, and literally in the answer is, it said, this one drove us insane. And I was like, okay, so I'm not crazy, this one was tough.
Is that one of the side ones where you're trying to unlock more health?
Yes.
I might actually know the one you're talking about, because I looked up two, and one of them, when I saw the solution, I was like, a rare miss, guys. Like,
yeah,
there's 10,000 puzzles in this game, and this is the one that did not feel like the answer was of the same class as the other yeah. answers. And that's a pretty good hit rate.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, it kind of smacks of like, well, hey, if I don't put one question on the exam that everybody misses, then how do I know that I've made an exam that's hard enough? You know, where it's like, it's the curve, right? Where it's yeah. like, hey man, we got to throw in a couple of puzzles that are crazy difficult, so that way nobody says this game's too easy. And then I did have a thought on, and I don't know if this goes into spoilers, but the final boss fight.
So. That is where I want to take this too. So I'm going to say right now the spoilers are about to start, and then there will be a timestamp that you can jump to where we, you know, rate the game in case you haven't put it together yet and need the solution to the puzzle.
It's bad.
Okay, so the last boss is amazing, and
yep,
the whole end dungeon is like, oh, you go back to the manor where your aunt's soul was stolen because she also has like a put my soul back in my body machine for reasons.
Do you not?
Yeah, I mean, no, I'm not as rich as her. I can't afford one. I'm in debt. So you get all the batteries that have the pieces of her soul in it, and then, and I mean, this is kind of her fault, right? Because she had the soul machine because she was going to make batteries out of it. But that's a different thing. So you...
Well, actually, to your point at the beginning when she says like, oh, and then I created this machine that would run almost limitless energy, but it cost the person's soul. Like, it consumed their soul in the process. I was like, okay. And the kids were sitting with me during this part. And I was like, okay. And then she was like, but I decided that was too far. I'm like, well, glad there was a line somewhere, you know, glad. But I turned to Megan and I was like, the thing is though, and I get it from like a general storytelling standpoint, but like scientifically, they had to know many months before they attempted the final test, like what was going to happen. Like she sought this technology out. And then once it was finished being built, she was like, okay, now it's a bad idea. But like, that should have failed on its face. You never should have built the Torment Nexus, you know?
Yeah. Well, and based on a lot of her dialogue throughout the game, it sounds a lot more like she actually thinks it's a fine idea. It just wasn't going to be profitable. Right? Because this is pretty much the only reason she ever foregoes anything. Amen. So you
got to sell treatments, not cures.
That's right. So you go backwards through the first dungeon, right? Her house, the family manor. And when you get all the batteries there and her soul is freed, and then bad guys show up, and then MacGuffin happens, and her soul is now like an evil, all-powerful, unlimited energy entity that you have to fight. And the reason you have to fight her is because she thinks she is beyond redemption, right?
Yep.
And so she's been putting on a very tough, like, I'm all business, no nonsense face, but really what it comes down to at the very end is that she wants to die. She wants this to kill her because she realizes she's gone way too far and she doesn't believe there's any coming back from this. Right. And so the game, which is, I mean, it's all like very bright, saturated colors. There's like slime monsters and you're a weird bat creature. And there's like bird people and the giant pigeon lady who also feeds small normal animal pigeons. Like,
don't the answer is don't think about it, Morty.
Yeah, the world is very silly, but then it just all, because you've come to know the characters over the course of the game, when she suddenly has this like come to Jesus moment where she's like begging her nephew, just let me die, stop trying to save me, I will defeat you just so I can die, it's like surprisingly heart-wrenching. And the whole final sequence, which thank you God for good checkpoints, the whole final sequence is a combat. It is a combat dungeon. It is the first of its kind in the whole game where you have to use all of your movement abilities just to get to each stage of the fight, and then use all of your movement abilities to avoid her otherwise unavoidable attacks during the fight, and then hit her when she's vulnerable. So it is everything you've been doing, right? It's all the skills, everything I've learned. it all comes to a head in this like just absolutely spectacular sequence that is actually quite hard, but they give you generous checkpoints during the boss fight that they don't normally do. No other sequence has checkpoints like that, right? So they are asking so much more of you, but the game is also like, we're not going to just throw you out there and make this friggin' impossible. I was eating that up. Like the whole final sequence, every time I figured out like, wait a minute, there's water on the outside of the arena and this AoE she doesn't reach the water. So I have to like wait until she's going to fire that attack and jump out onto the water and then zoom around the outside with the walk the dog until the AoE is dissipated. Then she'll be tired for a second. And then I got to jump back in and hit her. So I got to be thoughtful about where I avoided her attack, not just that I avoided her attack.
Yes.
It's like, oh my God, it's so good.
Oh my God, it's so good. Yeah, no, it's so good. Yes, absolutely. And to your point is that I feel like, especially a lot of classic games, I don't know if we see this as much, I mean, in modern games, but is that like the boss fight is just testing the combat portion of the game. This boss fight in a game about both combat and exploration tests both at the same time. So like if you're really, really great at exploration and really trash at the combat, it kind of evens out because you don't take a lot of damage during the exploration phase. And that's also where they give you hearts to help you replenish some of your health. So if you're really good at exploring and bad at the combat, then the exploring helps you, being good at the exploring helps you with the combat. And if you're great at the combat and trash at the exploring, well, then, you know, it should be a pretty straightforward encounter anyways. Yeah. So the fact that like, it's like, hey, we need you to be good at all of the game in order to beat the game, not just be good at the combat portion of the game, is really nice and like humane and generous to the players, saying like, hey, we love all of you, especially if you really love the exploring and we're kind of lukewarm about the combat. Well, hey, we've got you in the boss fight, you know?
Yeah. And this is the point in the game where you find out, not only are your cousins like jackasses who are just in it for the money, but they are literally just in it for the money because they're on Team Villain.
Yep.
The reason they have been trying to hinder you by helping you the whole time is because they actually want to take over the company, just like the scammy business people want to take over the company. And so there's I don't remember the exact dialogue, but there are the obvious signals of like, there's not going to be obvious like turn back points after this, right?
Yep.
And it's not until right after that it's like big story reveal and huge, you know, combat traversal, final dungeon, final boss sequence. So like they let you explore the world as freely as possible based on whatever movement abilities you've unlocked until they finally say, now you need to take everything you've learned and put it to the test.
Yeah, no, actually, so two things on that. One is my lived experience was, you know, going through the final mansion, you know, everything's good. And then, you know, I think there's a mini boss fight and then, you know, the thing and then the big final boss fight. So as we're kind of like walking in, Megan was making dinner and she goes like, hey, 15 minutes. And Teddy was like, you think we can beat the game in that amount of time? I was like, no,
but because there's like, obviously a big thing coming.
Yeah. And so because we were just about to go into like the first mini boss fight and he was like, but we got 15 minutes. I mean, like, it's just a boss. And I was like, oh no, this isn't her final form. There's no way, especially after the first 30 seconds of that fight. I'm like, oh, this is way too easy. Way too easy. There's more to this. And so we couldn't finish it before then. But also too, another, because they do telegraph that those your cousins are going to betray you, because at one point you go into your hideout and they're not there. They're over by the batteries talking some weird smack or whatever. Yeah, you know,
basically licking them in like a greedy fervor, like, oh my god, yes, these batteries.
Yeah, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. And so I walked in and it's just funny because again the kids are watching. I walk in and I see that and I went, well, that's not great. The kids were like, well, what's the problem? I'm like, oh, they're going to betray me later. Like, how do you know? I'm like, that just, they're gonna, they yeah, just are, man. They didn't put that scene in this video game for funsies. Like they're clearly evil.
Yeah.
And then that also made it click of like, oh, and that makes sense why they're trying to make a buck off of me while I'm saving the company. It all comes together. Cause it would have made sense just from like crazy, everybody's capitalism, nobody gives anything. But I was like, oh, there's actually an ancillary motivation for these two. The one last thing that I have is at one point I went on the popcorn thing. I went and I bought some popcorn because I forgot what it did and then immediately remembered what it did. So I threw it down at a poor NPC's feet and he had to run off the screen.
Yeah.
So I beat somebody up with pigeons at some point in the game and I still feel a little bad about it. And that's it.
You know, since you mentioned the popcorn twice, this should have come up during gameplay, but I will just throw it out there. You don't have an inventory. You literally just carry everything over your head, which is simple in a way that I actually thought made interacting with the world. I never had to think about like, oh, do I have this thing in my inventory this guy asked for? If a guy asked me to bring him a hamburger, I know if I have the hamburger because I'm holding it over my head. And that also meant like, I can't do certain kinds of traversal or combat in the world because I'm holding a key. I'm holding a hamburger. I'm holding the popcorn, right? So like the non-inventoriness, you can essentially carry exactly one item. And most of the time you are carrying zero items. That that gives you a level of clarity when you're looking at the world that you often don't get in a game like this, right? In a Zelda dungeon, maybe there are five keys that you need to complete the dungeon, but maybe at one point you have three of them and then several doors actually open like in very quick succession. That cannot happen here, right? If you need to interact with two keys, you must necessarily have to put one down. Even if you didn't put it into a lock, you have to put one down, then pick the other one up, right? And there are puzzles that work like that. But I just thought that was interesting that it's like, oh, your inventory space is kind of zero because while you have one thing in inventory, you are locked out of other abilities.
It's like one half, you know, you have half an inventory spot.
I thought that was an interesting way to set that up, and we didn't talk about it before, but you brought the popcorn up again, so that felt like a good thing.
And actually, so agree completely. Here's the, and then I'll shut up about it, but here's the way to think about it, is that you have an inventory space of one, but your carry capacity is zero. So the minute that you pick up an item,
you're encumbered.
You become encumbered.
Yeah.
And so we got there.
Yeah, no, I like that. Okay, so... hey, George, do you think this nostalgia game that we played held up or that it requires no nostalgia goggles to enjoy?
Yes!
It's so good. It's so good.
It's like, so good, man. I started playing it and then I texted you saying like, oh my God, this game's amazing. And then, I think it was another hour or two into it when we were like, we should do a Nostalgia Goggles episode about this. This is a really good game because it's not only is it so fun and enjoyable to play, it is so unique in the way it creates and then allows you to solve problems. And it does it in a way to where I never felt or very rarely felt frustrated or like I didn't know what to do or like I didn't have the right tools. Or that I was being railroaded and only had like one thing I could go do. There was a number of times when I was playing and the kids were like, oh, why aren't you going to the next battery? I'm like, I am spending some time exploring because I got a new traversal thing and I want to go check out this place. And like I said, since that was always rewarded, I always felt like I was making progress in the game. That every and the other thing that does that games like this can really struggle with is the amount of time you need to play it to have a satisfying gaming session is like 5 minutes most of the time. You can get in there for 5 minutes, do a couple of things, and feel like you had a good time, you know? So just, again, nines and tens across the board, highly recommend. It holds up.
And I would say it actually holds up beyond the first playthrough because I realized while we were talking in the spoiler section that the final sequence is like an advertisement for New Game Plus.
Yes.
Right. Because it's like, what if you had all of your abilities all of the time? You could go play the whole game with all of your abilities. And it's like, right. So the last thing they do is essentially say, that was great. Want to go again? Which is not every game that has a New Game Plus is that like obviously set up to actually play a second time immediately. Right. There are lots of games where I've played a New Game Plus like way later, you know, I'll come back to a save file and I'm like, oh, okay, right. I played this before. It'd be fun to just stomp through it again with superpowers. Right. But the game essentially invites you to consider playing it twice back to back with the way the final sequence is like an advertisement for like, check out all cool powers you unlocked. And I realized too, and I don't know if this is a perfect metaphor, but I actually felt the most powerless and helpless and frustrated at the very beginning, which makes sense because that is when you are the most powerless and frustrated, both mechanically and narratively, right? And then as you unlock more abilities, you know, you can go out in a slightly wider circle and then a slightly wider circle and then a slightly wider circle. And what you realize at the end is like, if you picture a spiral, you didn't end up that far from where you started at the center of the spiral. But if you look at the, if you like unrolled the spiral, it's like, look how far we've come. Right. So it's like, we didn't change the world. We didn't revolutionize things. We didn't grow up as teenagers and kill God like in a JRPG, but we personally have grown so much, right? And that's, God, we could do 2 more hours just effusively yep. praising every little aspect of the game. No goggles of any kind required. Like, please go play this game if anything we have said resonates.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, like, I'd say, like, if you got other things to do, don't go around the world, don't walk the dog, go play this game.
The curtain falls, the music plays, the credits roll, then it all fades to black, and you're left by yourself. The fanfare is gone, there's no player two there by your side to share victories won. But as you slowly progress down the hall to your bed, a few great events leak back into your head from the time that you spent traversing the land, battling evil, fighting the darkness, just sword in hand. Your memories creep in with the edge of a smile. You realize again what you've lost for a while. You're gonna think back much less on how you saved the day.